Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, where we explore key issues and compelling stories in the trucking industry. I am not your normal host. My name is Daniel. I'm usually behind the camera, you know, on the ones and twos. Dayton's taking my spot today. And the reason I'm here is because I have the honor to interview one of my best friends, Mr. Logan Haynes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
About myself.
You work here.
I work here. Yeah. I'm a trailer tech here. Have been for coming up on a year in about 2 weeks. So, and before that, I was a helicopter mechanic in the Marine Corps. And I grew up 20 minutes from here and left for about 5 years and I'm back now.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. I'm a simple guy.
You are a simple guy. what's some of your hobbies, you know? Definitely, you're anti-hunting, you know, anti-golf.
No, I like hunting, golf, primarily duck hunting. Preface that before I get a bunch of deer hunting questions around the office. That's pretty much it. I got a garden, dogs, one kid, one on the way, wife, so pretty busy, but I like to keep it quiet and calm. Not a whole lot of crazy stuff going on in my life, so.
What is it about duck hunting that you love more than deer hunting?
The when I was younger, it was kind of like the show of it all, you know, shooting guns out there, riding around in the boat, in the dark, you know, doing crazy stuff. Now it's like I like the peace and tranquility of it, the meditation, getting to be in God's creation before any other creature's awake, and watching the whole world come to life, and just the beauty of it. It's a special thing to experience.
Right on, man. So the reason that the story behind us interviewing you today is you were talking to our chaplain, Mr. Jim Revelle.
Yep.
And he said you were kind of just sharing your testimony and, you know, all these things that have happened in your life. And soon enough, you guys are both just crying, and he's telling us we got to get Logan on the podcast. Let's do it. I love Logan's story if he's willing to tell it. So we'll get into that, but let's start out with you started out your career in the Marines.
Correct.
Tell me a little more about that. Why did you want to join the Marines? What was your job in the Marines?
Honestly, I've always wanted to join the Marine Corps since I was a little kid. I mean, I was one of those kids that was like, I had, you know, old uniforms from the thrift store and was just out in the woods doing weird stuff. But, you know, my dad was in the Marine Corps, and it was like I had just idolized him. He was my hero, and I wanted to do that. And, like, the things he would tell me and all, it just motivated me to do that a lot. And then when I got into high school, my mom did not like the idea, as most moms don't.
She did,
you know.
Not.
And so she convinced me to at least try going to college. That was her deal with me. Can you at least try it for me?
How long did that last?
One semester. Once I realized I was paying to fail classes, I was like, yeah, this is not my path. I need a little bit more of a stern hand, and I know right where to get it.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego, California. Something. So I called her from the recruiter's parking lot and said, well, she asked me, where are you? I said, I'm at the recruiter's office. I'm dropping out of college and joining the Marine Corps. And she cried and yelled at me and begged me not to, but it was kind of one of those things where it's like, I don't know why, but I just know I need to do this.
Yeah.
And I went and never looked back. So that's why.
What's the biggest lesson that the Marine Corps taught you?
Oh, hard work.
I'm sure there's plenty.
There's a lot. There's really not one, but it's like hard work, discipline, dedication, and like, It's easy for somebody to work hard when they're doing something they don't or they want to do. It's hard to find the motivation to work hard when you're doing something you don't want to do. And 90% of the Marine Corps is being forced to work hard at something you don't want to do. And so that was one of the biggest lessons, was just gritting your teeth and getting it done.
Is it fun?
Yeah, it was really fun.
Every time we talk about it, you're always like, it was terrible. It was the worst experience ever, but it was so much fun.
That's a pretty common description that you hear. One of my recruiter told me before I left, because we were like, asking him the same questions. And he was like, it's 80% suck, 20% fun. But that 20% fun is really fun.
Yeah. I love that quote. Did anything surprise you about being in the Marines? Something that you didn't really expect going into it?
Yeah, pretty much the whole thing was a surprise. But the way that it, honestly, similar to your faith, if you just submit to it and let the things they're teaching you work, it'll work. Because a lot of times you'll see guys, you know, they go through boot camp and they teach you, they stress so much discipline, so much hard work, honor, courage, commitment, the core values, all that stuff. And then you'll see guys that just completely, a year after boot camp, going off the rails, getting in trouble, getting kicked out. And it's like, what are you doing? And it's like, it kind of parallels people's faith with the Lord. It only works if you take it serious and let it work. If you actually commit to changing, to being more disciplined, to being more honorable, more courageous, you will be. But if you just think they're going to magically cast a spell on you and make you the guy from the poster, you know, it ain't going to happen that way. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, the same way with God, it's like you have to submit to being humble, being kind, being loving, and being faithful, and it'll happen over time. But if you think he's just going to magically snap his fingers and, oh, here you are, magic, you're the best person in the world, it's like it's not how it works, and it, actually the complete opposite will usually happen.
That's awesome. Do you have any advice for anybody that might be thinking about joining the Marines?
Yeah, get physically ready. If you're actually committed to doing it, get physically ready, but also get mentally ready, because a lot of people ask you, oh, what's the hardest part of boot camp? Is it the running, the pull-ups? No. Because you'll get that as time comes. You're running everywhere, doing push-ups all day long. Your body will just get stronger. But the most reason you see people quit is they were not mentally prepared. They watch the YouTube videos, and they're like, oh, yeah, that looks cool. And then they go and realize this is not cool when it's 24/7. You know, they're just all day long, guys in funny hats screaming at you and doing crazy stuff. So mentally prepare yourself. And if you kind of back yourself in a corner, just like, I can't quit. Quit's not an option. You just won't. And you'll make it through. You'll wake up one day and all of a sudden you're done. And then that's when the real hard stuff begins, when you get into the actual Marine Corps. A lot of people focus on boot camp, but that's the easy part.
What did you do to physically prepare yourself for boot camp?
I ran all the time. Oh, you want that story?
I had a certain story in mind.
As you can tell, I'm a heavier person. I don't have such a slender build, and the Marine Corps likes slender people. And so I had to cut weight to make it in my weight range to go to boot camp. And Marines are also not known to be the brightest bunch, you know. So my recruiter told me, well, take laxatives and don't eat anything and drink only one bottle of water a day. So that's what I did. But I got chocolate laxatives, and it said to eat one square.
And what did you do?
And wait an hour. Well, I ate one, waited an hour, nothing happened. Ate two, waited an hour, nothing happened. So I ate like all 12 of these squares of chocolate. I won't give you the fine details, but it was bad. That's what I'll say. It was bad.
But it
works. He was not lying. It works. I cut like 30 pounds in a month doing that. Right. I wouldn't advise it. Don't do it. It's not healthy for you, but it does work.
Practical weight loss advice from Logan Haynes. Yeah.
And when you don't eat, it like also resets your body. I don't know all the technical terms, but like I just wasn't hungry after that for like 6 months.
Probably sick.
Yeah. I'd eat like a granola bar and be good like all day.
Yeah, I really wanted to get that story out of you on the camera.
I figured you did. I figured I'd spare the audience some of the details of that because it gets quite gruesome.
But. Yeah, I've heard the details. Pivoting from that, let's get into a little bit of a deeper topic. The reason we're here is your testimony. And I'll just let you take the reins on that story if you want to.
Okay. Yeah, I can. It's a bit of a long story, so buckle up. You've heard it about 100 times. So, my testimony really begins as a young child. I grew up in church. My parents were both big on their faith and had a good relationship with God, and my father especially really wanted to instill that into me and my siblings. So we were always in church, but me, something, if you meet me, you'll find out pretty quickly, is I'm stubborn and bullheaded and like to learn lessons my own way instead of just taking advice. And didn't really listen much, or I did. I had a working relationship with Christ as a young child, but as many young men especially have happened to them, is once you start getting a little testosterone in your brain, going through puberty, you start thinking, I got it all figured out. I'll do it myself. I want to do it the hard way because I can, just to show people I can, you know. And kind of straight away, and kind of, it was almost like a joke, like a Santa Claus fairy tale, like, yeah, it's not real, whatever. Not that I didn't think it wasn't real, but I just didn't take it seriously at all. And carried that through. I actually became close with Christ again in boot camp. I just kind of wrote, it's a saying we had in the Marine Corps, like, you know, you, when things go bad, it's phrased a little differently, but when things go bad, you revert back to your highest level of training, you know? And so it's like, when I have no phone, nobody I know to talk to, I'm just stressed out to the max, I reverted back to my highest level of training, which was prayer and counting on the Lord, which kind of makes me feel guilty now. It's like, man, I only ever, you know, had a relationship with him when things weren't going my way or things were hard, you know, but that's a lesson of life. But yeah, so after I got out of boot camp, I kind of, again, strayed away from it, you know, as to say, like, didn't need it, which you always need it when you get a little older and figure that out. But yeah, just wasn't going to church, wasn't praying, wasn't doing anything. Got married when I was 20, about my first year in the Marine Corps. And my wife had no history of church, faith, anything like that. Didn't really know God, know anything about it, which I would not advise if you want a relationship with Christ to do it that way. It worked out for me, but typically not the way you want to do it. It causes issues, which I quickly learned when, even though I didn't have a relationship with Christ at the time, the foundation of all my morals and beliefs were built on Christian morals and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so we quickly started butting heads, and it's like, why can't we do this? It's like, because that's wrong. Why is it wrong? I don't know, but it is. That's, you know, things like that. But we worked through it, and it really came to a head in 2024 when we just had my first son, and he was, gosh, what, 3 months old? So, you know, right in the throes of it. He just won't sleep through the night, crying all the time. You're not getting any sleep. It's rough. Add that on top of the stress of military life, where it's just all the time, nonstop stress. And I was sleeping on the couch, trying to get a little rest, because I could not get any sleep in my bedroom, because he was just raising up a storm in there all night long. And my wife woke me up, and I had my back to her. And it was one of those things where I could tell in her voice somebody died. Like, you ever have that experience where it's like, I don't know what happened, but I can tell by what they're saying, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And she was just saying my name over and over again. I finally rolled over and was like, what happened? And she's like, you better call your mom. My dad was found unresponsive in our backyard. And so it was like my whole world shattered, because kind of like what I said earlier, my dad was like my superhero. You know, we're like most little boys, it's like your dad's your superhero and you kind of grow out of it. That never happened to me. That dude, I mean, he's my superhero the whole way through. Even if the times where, as a mean teenager, I didn't act like it, he was. And I hope he knew it, but I don't know if he did. But, yeah, so it was like just seeing your biggest hero fall. So I called my mom and we'd start talking, because I didn't really have any of the details. And it was, he was found unresponsive and was down when the paramedics got there. And they did CPR on him and stuff, and they were taking him to the hospital. And I knew that's a 30-minute ride. He's already been down. Like, he's dead, and if he's not, he's going to be. Like, there's no coming back from that. Mm-hmm. So I started pretty quickly coming to the realization, okay, he's gone, you know, waiting on this phone call from them at the hospital to confirm it. And my wife was asking me, you know, or not asking me, but telling me, like, well, it's not official. Like, he could still. And I was like, no, trying to prepare her, you know, because I didn't want it to be this, get her hopes up and have this just crash and burn defeat, you know. It's like, no, he's gone. Like, there's no coming back from that. So they're going to the hospital and stuff, and I just needed to be alone. I'm not the type of person that's like express my emotions in front of people, especially like my wife and children when something's affecting me really hard. That was a kind of a lesson through the Marine Corps that you get is like, if you're in charge of like leading people, like you don't get the luxury of showing emotion. You have to be calm, cool, collected all the time. And so I pulled myself away and went and took a shower because it was like the one place I could like guarantee nobody's going to come in here. I've got about 10 minutes to let it all out, and then I got to get back to work. We got stuff to do. You know, I got to start planning flights, figuring all this stuff out. So I went in that shower, and again, as I had mentioned earlier, reverted back to my highest level of training there, where it was like I just actually, for the first time in my life, sincerely cried out to the Lord. And it started out as like the typical negotiating, like, I'll give anything, please let him be okay, all this stuff. And then it hit me while I was doing that, and I was like, I've been told my whole life not to do that. That's not how it works. I know that's not how it works. And I had this like just moment where I was like, you know what, he's already like, he's probably dead, but like, I know you're not gonna do this for no reason to me. You're not just picking on me. And I just cried out, like, whatever your will is, like, carry me through it. Help me. And in that moment, it was like I could feel the Lord's hands wrap around my heart and just hold me together. Especially, I was just praying. Dang, I'm getting a little emotional here. You gotta have the waterworks going.
Let loose, man.
But I was just praying, like, please hold me together because I have my wife and my son, like, they're going to be, well, my wife's going to be a mess, and, like, she needs me to lead her through this. Like, I don't have the time to be out of working order, you know. I got to be ready to go here. And so I came out of that, and I mean, you can ask my wife, but I was pretty somber, pretty quiet. And you know me, I'm a talker. I wasn't saying a whole lot of words, but it was kind of like that game time moment of like, okay, stuff's about to get bad. It's about to get hard. Time to pull up your pants and get to work. And but it was kind of like just agony in that moment because I'm 900 miles away in North Carolina. And it's like when something like that happens, you want to run immediately and go help everybody and start doing something. You don't know what, but do something. It's like I just have to sit here on my couch and wait 2 days until my plane ride. And that was rough. But I was just praying constantly all throughout the day. And came to actually feel what it meant to have the Lord in your heart. I think when I look back now, I think that was the moment that I truly let God and accepted him to enter into my heart. Because ever since that day, I've been a different person. I mean, you could probably attest to it. I've been
100%.
It was like a 180-degree flip of, I'm like, I don't even know who I am anymore. Because it's like, this is, everything I like doing now and everything about my personality is completely different from how I used to be. But, yeah, that was the true moment he entered my heart. And it, shortly after that, you know, we fly home, do the funeral, and something also about me that's a little weird is that I enjoy funerals. Not like it's like a big party, but something I learned from my dad was he would always get angry at funerals. He's like, why is everybody crying? Like, why is everybody sad? Like, they're with God. They're in heaven. Why are we sad? We should be partying right now, like having a great time. And so I took that, which I already have been okay with death. I mean, growing up hunting and fishing all the time is like you get pretty used to in realizing like, okay, it's just a dead body. Like what actually made that being what it is isn't there anymore. That's mm-hmm. just the shell. And so I'm pretty good with death and stuff, but I think a lot of people tell you I was partying it up, like just loving it, talking to everybody mm-hmm. at the funeral, you know, having a great time. I was so happy. But you were about to say something, were you?
Yeah, I think that perspective that you have on death is what's so impactful. At least it's been impactful to me throughout, you know, having a secondhand experience through all this. I remember when you called me to tell me that, hey, Brian was found unresponsive. I also knew in the tone of your voice, like, it's not, he's gone.
Yeah. And then yeah, you were the first person I called, yeah. besides, like, my mom.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was like, I don't know who to talk to, but I know Daniel will know what to say, or yeah. at least listen.
And even after I think it was, like, an hour or so later, I called you on my way home from wherever I was at, and you even said immediately, the same day, hours after you heard the news, that, man, me being upset about this is kind of selfish in my own way because he's having the time of his life up there.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's insane to think the first day. It changed my perspective kind of on life after that, life and death, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, it was something that was what I struggled with the most during the grieving process through that. It wasn't like the actual grief of it, of like, oh, I miss him. It was every time I would get that feeling of missing him, I would feel so selfish. I was like, dude, my best friend, my hero, is in heaven right now, and I'm over here whining, crying about it. Like, dude, you should be happy. So that was a point. I was like, every time I would get sad, I'm like, no, get happy.
Yeah. And you did a great job of that. keeping your spirits high. Honestly, I had some people would come up to me and say, hey, there's something's wrong.
Yeah,
with
Logan. I noticed that quite a few people thought I was losing my mind because you would have thought it was like a family reunion at the funeral. Yeah. I was just cracking jokes, having a great time. And everybody else is like crying and like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, sorry for what? I'm like, this is awesome, dude. I get to be here for my best friend's last moments. Yeah. Get to put him in the ground and celebrate him like that. There ain't nothing sad about this.
Yeah.
So, but that's the true freedom you get when you come to Christ, is death is nothing. And it's like, yeah, I have to go the rest of my life without him before I see him again. And it's like, okay, but when in heaven, you get to spend eternity there. The 80-some years you're most likely going to be here is going to be nothing. It'll be over yeah. before you know it.
And for any Christian, that's the end goal, is to
yeah.
be, to go to heaven. The only yeah. way to get to heaven is to die.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a win-win situation.
Yeah. So that was what I tried to stick to through that process. But also in that moment, I realized I had a big revelation where it was like, I have not been taking this seriously. And it's like, because my dad was only 56. It's like, kids are finally out of the house. Him and mom are just starting to like get out and be able to do fun stuff again, you know? And then he dies. And it's like, and it was out of nowhere. I don't know if I said it yet, but he had a heart attack while he's mowing the lawn. So he was just like, he was there 1 minute, dead the next. And it was really eye-opening. Like, I have not been taking this serious. I've been treating it as something I'll figure out when I'm old. Like, oh, when death's close, then that's when I'll figure it out. It's like, no, death's always close. Mm-hmm. It's right around the corner. You just don't know which corner it is. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I need to figure this out. And then I started looking at my wife and my son, and it's like, I'm supposed to be leading them through this, and she doesn't even know who God is. I have all this knowledge that has been instilled in me since I was a child and haven't shared it. And it was really convicting, and I felt really guilty about that. And so pretty soon after, we started going to church, and that's when I really realized, like, oh, my wife has, like, no knowledge of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because she would, like, ask me questions, and I'm like, you learned that, like, your first day in Sunday school. You don't know that? And she's like, no, I've never done this before. And I was like, oh. I was like, we got to start at square one here, you know?
Yeah.
But
Let's dive into the story of you first going back to church, because at the time you weren't going to church out there. You didn't really have a church that you knew about. You're kind of just been living in North Carolina, not really trying out new churches. It was, like you said, it wasn't a big part of your life at that time. But then your first time yeah. going back to church, I think, is a pretty cool yeah. story.
Almost forgot about that. You got to keep me on track,
I'll
Dan.
Keep you on
you
track.
Know how I am. I like to get off into the weeds. But yeah, so it's probably about 6 months after my dad died. My wife's family, I think, I could be off on that timeline, but not important. My wife's family came to visit us, and they were staying in an Airbnb across the city that we lived in. And I had been driving there every day, like before work or after work, to go see them. And there's this church right along the main road that you take to get there. It's like 3 blocks from the Airbnb. And I drove past one day, and something just hit me. It was like, I gotta be in that building. I'm like, I've been wanting to go back to church and been scared to do it because I'm like worried to be judged and all this stuff. It's like, but something's telling me I need to be in that building. And looking back now, I think that was God speaking to me, like, get in that building, you know. But I also knew that my wife's oldest sister, my sister-in-law, had been interested in getting into faith. She had kind of talked to me about it. I heard her say some things kind of in, like, passing and stuff. But she was also in a rough spot of addiction with alcohol and cigarettes and all kinds of other stuff. I don't really know the exact details, but it was evident. It was like you could look at her and it's like, you're not the same person that I used to know. Like, you're just completely different. But I knew she had this interest, and I was just like, well, maybe I'll ask her to go with me. Because I was like, I know how scary it can be, especially, it's like, I've grown up in church. I know all the little customs, all the things, you know. It's like, she doesn't know anything about it. It can be a lot easier having somebody to kind of guide you through it. And this was out of my character, but that after I passed it, I went to the Airbnb and was like, hey, you want to go to church with me tomorrow morning? Because it just happened to be Sunday the next day. It's crazy how that works. It's almost like there's a divine creator that knows what he's doing. But, and I was terrified to ask her because I was just so scared of, like, rejection or making it awkward or weird, you know. But, it was meant to be. She was like, no, I'd love to go, you know. And so the next day I come pick her up and we head off to church. And another thing about her is she has had really bad anxiety in the past. I mean, got in a car accident and couldn't drive, like even across town to the gas station or something, would just get really bad panic attacks. And as we start pulling into the lot of the church, she's just freaking out. I mean, just sweating, like shaking. And she's like, I'm going to throw up. I'm like, I've got a Walmart bag. And so she hops at the back seat of my car and starts puking in this bag, which, Tamara, I'm sorry that I'm, like, putting your business out there, but it's pertinent to the story. So she starts puking in the back seat. He's like, we can just leave. We can just leave. I'm like, no, you need to be in that building now. I'm like, it was kind of one of those signs where it was like, which I didn't really put much stock in at the time of demons and, you know, spiritual warfare, but it was kind of in that moment something hit me. I'm like, no, that's, you need to be in there now. Like, something is happening inside of you just coming in the parking lot. I can't wait to see what happens when you get inside them doors, you know. So I pretty much forced her to go in. I was like, no, we're staying. I'm like, I got some napkins. You clean yourself up. We're going inside. And so we went inside, and it was almost like the service was tailor-made just to speak to her. And it was, I mean, just every issue that I knew that she had struggled with, they had went in depth on, and it was like it was made for her. And at the end, they did an altar call. You know, anybody here who's not familiar with Jesus, but you want to accept him in your heart, you come up here. And it's a Southern church, you know, North Carolina. So he's like, you run up here. You don't walk, you run. Don't look around at anybody else, see if anybody else is doing it. You run. And I was looking, and I was going to tell her, like, oh, you should go up there. I was like, no, this is a decision she has to make. I'm like, nobody can push her into this. You have to make this choice. And as I look over to see, like, her reaction, what she's doing, she's running up the she's already gone. She's running. And so it was great. And so I'm over there crying. She's crying. They took her back and gave her a Bible, and I don't really know what they discussed back there. I'd assume good things, But ever since that moment, she has been just on fire for Jesus. And it's kind of a moment where I realized things are full circle, where it was like I went through the pain of my father's death, but it spurred me into leading her into her faith. And what a just privilege it is for God to use me in that way. It was just so special. But then farther down the road, my wife's whole family really wasn't familiar with Christ or had a relationship with him. My wife's mother, so my mother-in-law, was kind of angry at God. She had lost her parents when she was young and was just angry, like, why would you take them from me? Which is a feeling a lot of people can relate to, you know. But now to see that moment of God giving me the word to, hey, go into that church, just trust me. And I did, and now it's led not only my sister-in-law, but both of my sister-in-laws and my mother-in-law to have a relationship with Christ and to see the difference it's made in their life. Because they've all struggled with addiction and anxiety and all kinds of things. And to see the point that they went to since I've known them at 17 to where I am now at 25 is like you wouldn't recognize them. Just the peace and love that they have. And it's just a special thing to see the way that the Lord works in people's lives when you just quit worrying about what people think and just do what he tells you. Just trust him.
It's beautiful, man.
It is.
I think one thing about you that sticks out to me that's changed a lot since you have started your relationship with Christ and really dove deep into it is you used to be kind of an antisocial guy. You used to not really like people.
Yeah, I didn't.
But after Brian's passing, it's kind of like, you know, he just went into your body.
Oh,
You are a carbon copy of your father, man.
I love talking to people now, and I can just talk and talk and talk. And that was kind of the point where I said, like, I don't recognize myself anymore, is because before it wasn't even that I was antisocial. I was so self-conscious and unconfident in myself and worried about what people would think that I didn't talk to people. But, like, I did like talking to people, but I was so scared to do it that I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But then you get the joy of the Lord in your heart, you know, and it's like, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm like, I just want to talk to people. Yeah. So what if I say something stupid? I do it all the time. Nobody expects anything else, you know? So, yeah, it is awesome. It's wonderful.
It's all about spreading the good news.
Yeah. And once you have that joy, it's like nobody's going to take that from you.
Yeah.
They can't. And, but, yeah, another special thing about kind of like my mother-in-law is that through all the hardship that I've seen her go through, I mean, I won't get into the deep details of it, but I've seen so much through the time that I've known them of just struggles. And that whole time, she thinks she's going through it alone. They all think they're going through it alone. But little do they know, for 5 years, I've been praying for them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, don't ever lose the faith in your prayers. Because just because it's not happening the next day, the next week, the next month, he's got a plan, and you got to trust his plan. It's not up to you, you know? And that's kind of one of the things, is like, once you humble yourself, that's when things start changing, when you just let his plan work. But it's kind of just a message to everybody out there that's, whenever you're, because I've been through that, where it's like, man, I feel like I'm the only person that's feeling this right now. I just feel like I'm alone in a dark room. It's like, there could be people out there praying for you, and you don't even know it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've never told her that, so this is probably going to be the first time she hears it.
She knows now.
That whole time I was praying for you, and it worked, so love you.
You've got a quote that you've said at Bible study a couple times that you've said that, you know, it can make some people uncomfortable when you say this, but there's a lot of truth behind it, and there's a lot deeper meaning to the surface level of this quote. And the quote is, "The day my dad died was the best day of my life."
Yeah.
Why don't you crack that open for us?
That was a big revelation that I had probably about a year to a year and a half after my dad died. And I would look at other people in my life and the way they were reacting to it and treating it as like just that was like ground zero where the nuke went off, like the day our whole lives changed. And it was like, yeah, it did change. But for me, it was like everything good I have came out of that day. It was like, yeah, I lost my father, but he's in heaven now. But I also gained the Lord in my life, got to see the way he worked in my wife's life, in my family's life, in her family's life. I witnessed miracle after miracle, all because that dude had a heart attack in our backyard. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And then not even to mention the spiritual stuff, but so I moved into my mom's house because she didn't want the house when I got out of the Marine Corps because it was too big of a house, it was too quiet for her. And I mean, most people can understand trying to buy a house in today's market when you're working off a sole income and you got a kid It's like I was stressing for months, like, how am I going to buy a house and move across the country? I can't afford a garage to live in, let alone a house, you know? And I look back at all the things that have been a blessing in my life just through him dying. It's like, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. Aside from the spiritual stuff, I wouldn't have a house to live in. I'd be living in a shack, you know? So it's like,
I would have let you use my garage for the record.
I probably would have took you up on it too. But it just, so many blessings. And it's like, the more I try to count them, the more I get lost in them, because there's just so many that come out of it. It's kind of like that old cliche, like, oh, you got to look on the bright side. There is a bright side to everything. Mm. It's like, you just got to find it and live in it. You know, you'll become what you focus on. If you focus on the Lord and happiness, you'll be happy. If you focus on darkness and depression, that's what you'll become.
What advice would you have for someone who might be going through grief right now, loss of a loved one?
A lot of times it's like you're looking for something to make it better. And it's a hard thing for us to come to terms with, because there is nothing to make it better. It's gonna hurt. It's gonna be painful. And you just, the only thing that fixes it is time. It gets better after time. You start learning new ways to do things. Slowly you'll stop thinking about them every time you look at anything. It'll go away. And it kind of hurts going through that too, because you're like, I don't want to forget them. I don't want to not think about them when I see something that they used to love. But it's like, that's a part of it. You die and you leave this world. Mm-hmm. But you get a way better one. So it's like, that was a little thing that helped me, is when I would have those emotions, like, man, I heard this song and I, for the first time today, didn't think about him. And it's like, good. He's not in this world anymore. I don't need to be thinking about him. He's taken care of. I don't need to worry about it. Mm. You know? So, but yeah, with time, you just got to give it time. And that's the hardest thing about grief, is because, like, we are not very patient creatures. We want what we want, and we want it now. If I'm sad, I want to feel better now. It's like, well, it's going to take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to have to get used to it.
I think part of that, looking on the bright side too, is like thinking about how much you missed your dad when he was gone. That in itself is kind of a blessing.
Yeah.
Because there's someone out there who didn't have the best relationship with their dad, and mm-hmm. has no emotions at all at them dying or something, leaving their life or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So the fact that you, I think we've talked about this before at Bible study, but it's not that necessarily you lost your dad. It's you gained a great life with him before he passed on.
Yeah, it was such a blessing to have a father that was not only present in my life, but loved being present in my life. I mean, he'd show up to everything covered in dust from work and just sweaty and stinky, but it's like he was there and he wasn't going to miss it, you know? Mm-hmm. That is another true blessing that the Lord gave me. And just a role model to model what being a man is, and being a leader, and someone who was strong in what he believed. It was a blessing for sure.
If there's one thing, I'm sure you have many lessons from your dad, but if you could pick one thing that really sticks out, what's a one lesson that your dad taught you about life?
I'd say the biggest one is know when to love and know when to be hard. And I think a lot of times we kind of, it's something I've learned from not only watching him, but kind of growing up as a man and becoming a father, as you start to see, is like when you're younger, a lot of times he'd be punishing you and you're like, God, he's just so mean. All he does is just mean, you know? It's like, and you start to get angry and it's like you can't understand it. But then you become a father and it's like he's not being mean because he doesn't like you or he hates you. He's being mean because the world's a whole lot meaner. And he's trying to prepare you to not lose your mind every time something bad happens. Mm-hmm. And what a blessing that is to have somebody to teach you that, where it's like, now I get to look back on it from his perspective of, it's like, oh, he loved me incredibly. That's why he was being that way.
Yeah.
It's because he's trying to prepare me to fill his shoes. And that was special. But yeah, but at the same time, have a loving hand. I mean, if you met my dad, it's like, you never met somebody that could get so angry and be so loving at the same time, dude. He'd just scream at you, and then he'd come give you a hug and tell you he's sorry and he loves you, and then explain why he's doing what he's doing. And yeah, so that's kind of the dichotomy of a father all in a nutshell, is like knowing when to love and when to be hard.
He wasn't just a father to you as well. I mean, he was a father to a lot of kids around. I mean, me included, I definitely thought of him as kind of a second father.
Yeah. And yeah, he wasn't scared to get on anybody.
No,
if you were coming
not.
In the house, you were going to play by the rules, you know?
Neither was your mom. And shout out Renee.
Yeah, they liked correcting people. they weren't shy of it, but yeah, he was something special for sure.
Absolutely. So we have a lesson from your earthly father. What's a lesson from your heavenly father? What's a lesson that God's taught you throughout all this? If you could, I mean, again, I'm sure there's many, but what's one that really sticks out?
The biggest one that has like just changed my life at a foundational level is just trusting. You know, we hear it so much, like, oh, the Lord's will. You just got to trust the Lord. Nobody really ever tells you what that means or what that takes. It's always just this thing we say like it's easy. It's like it's probably the hardest part of following Christ is actually having faith. Yeah. Because what your eyes are telling you and what your heart is telling you are two completely different things. Your heart's telling you trust in the Lord, like he's got me, but then your eyes are telling you everything's on fire around me and going crazy. And your brain can't figure out how to make sense of the two together, you know? And so that would be the biggest thing I learned through my dad's death from the Lord was like, just trust. Trust in my plan. I've got it figured out. You just got to go where I tell you to go, when I tell you to go. And that applying that to every aspect of your life is like just life-changing. And I think that's where so much of the joy comes from, because it's like, I don't have to worry about money anymore. I don't have to worry about how I'm going to get here if the car breaks down. I don't worry about any of that stuff. It happens, it's like, okay, well, figure it out. It always works out. Mm-hmm. And if it don't, we'll
it's
figure something
like
else out.
Your favorite verse.
Yeah.
Look at the sparrows.
Yeah. The birds of the sky. Mm-hmm. They do not reap, they do not sow. But the Lord provides.
Incredible. So now we've got lessons from your father, lessons from your heavenly father. What lessons have you learned from being a father yourself?
So a lot of it is just coming to terms with you have no idea what you're doing. You know, and it kind of gives you a lot of grace when you look back on your parents, where you were just always on, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And it's like, once you become a parent, you look back and be like, they had no idea what they were doing either. They were trying to figure it out just as much as you were. You know, it's like, this is my first time having a kid. I don't know what I'm doing. But definitely it gives you such a perspective on God and how he views us in such a different understanding, because it's like sometimes it's hard to understand, like, oh, God loves me. He still loves me, even though I've done so many bad things. I've turned my back on him. I've betrayed him. I've done all this. Like, why would he still care? And it's like, you become a father and you look at this little kid and you'll be like, hey, don't touch that, knowing he's going to get hurt if he touches it. And he'll look at you and still touch it. And you'll do everything you can to stop him from touching it. But eventually, you're just going to have to say, you know what, touch it and figure it out. And then they touch it and they cry, and you're right there to hold them and kiss them and make them feel better. And it's like such an understanding, like how many times I've gone through something painful or felt horrible, and it's like, oh, that was my fault. He tried to stop me so many times, and then I left him no choice but to let me figure it out on my own. And yeah, that is such a big lesson. And yeah, you never knew you could love something so much when you become a parent.
Is there anything else you want to tack on to your testimony there before? I've got some more, you know, lighter, fun stuff.
That is the fun stuff for me, the heavy stuff. I like that, but I don't know. It's just, I have to think about that one.
Dayton, do you have any questions over there, too? We can cut in.
Yeah, I got some stuff, but I just say, I mean, I'm curious a little bit on your relationship together.
Like, oh, sure.
When you first met him, what was your first thoughts of Logan and Logan's first thoughts of Daniel?
Oh, boy.
And how did you grow your friendship? Like, what's some of the first memories you have of each other?
First memories we have of each other.
You want to start or you want me to start?
Dude, I don't even remember. It's been so long. So Logan and I have known each other since, what, the fifth grade?
Fifth grade, yeah.
We were in band together.
We were.
That's where we became close friends. I don't even know.
You also sat next to me in fifth grade.
Yeah.
That was where it really started.
In band?
No, in the classroom.
I don't remember this.
You don't remember this?
No.
Jeez, does this guy even care about me? My goodness. Yeah, we sat next to, they switched desk seating position or whatever in like fifth grade, and you sat next to me, and I was like, I've never really talked to this guy.
Yeah, who's this weirdo?
And then pretty soon I was like, this guy's an idiot, but he's funny.
That's right. That's exactly what I thought about you.
Yeah, just two idiots having a good time.
Yeah, and then, I mean, soon after that, I mean, even speaking to Brian and Renee, being just so open to letting people constantly be at their house. Yeah. I think I spent probably four nights straight at Logan's house.
Yeah. That was kind of weird, but like sleepovers at my house just turned into like a week-long thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why it was that way, but yeah, and it slowly grew. I mean, our relationship grew over time, because I mean, when you're a kid, you kind of go through like, oh, you're hanging out with this person for like a couple months, mm-hmm. like, and then you switch, and you know, so you're kind of always going around. But me and you would always come back together, and it was like, no matter how much time we spent apart, it was like, you could call Daniel and that dude's going to show up. It doesn't matter, you know, hell or high water, so to say, is like, this guy's going to show up for you. And that's why I've always kept you close. It's like I view you as more than a friend. You're like a brother to me now. It's because you'll show up at any time, whenever I need you.
So you're using me.
Pretty much. Free labor, man. You can't get me.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, I mean, I always think back to it was right before you left for boot camp. We just like went and drove around, yeah. Talked.
For like literally 9 hours.
Till the sun rose. We just sat on your car, yeah. And watched the sunrise on some random country road.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think I'd be hanging out with my girlfriend or something, but
nope. Me.
Driving around with Dan watching the sunrise.
How romantic.
Another thing I've always like kept you as a friend like close is because you're just not scared to call me on something.
Yeah.
Like you're not scared to be like, yo, you're screwing
Likewise.
Up right now, stop.
Yeah.
And it's like, especially the older you get, you find the value in that. It's like, you don't want mm-hmm. yes people around you that are just always going to agree with you. It's like, I want somebody there who's going to tell me I'm doing something wrong and I need to fix it. And I've always loved that accountability between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And how it never affects like our relationship. It's like, okay, you know what, you're right.
Builds it.
Or you know what, I don't think you're right, but we'll just disagree on that one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another special thing about you. And he's got a sick mustache.
I also think of us what was it, fifth or sixth grade when we were in band,
when your trumpet got launched across the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was definitely foundational. Like,
tell that story.
I was like, oh, I like this guy. We were sitting there, and as I was telling you earlier, we were notorious for talking all the time.
Yep.
And Daniel also is known to be a little hard of hearing.
And seeing.
And seeing. I wasn't going to go there, but.
Thought you were.
We'll go there. He's blind. But we're sitting there, and the teacher is trying to get. He's speaking about something. I couldn't tell you what. But I have noticed, okay, it's quiet. I should probably at least pretend to pay attention. So I'm looking at the teacher. Well, Daniel is turned sideways on his chair.
Let me preface. I was coming in late from a test that I had to finish, and I was frantically putting my trumpet together.
Yeah.
Getting
but
ready to
from
go.
From the appearances of the teacher, Daniel is turned sideways talking to me,
yep.
Not even looking at him. And I can see the teacher look at him, and I don't remember if he like said something. He did something to get your attention, and I'm elbowing you while you're talking, going, "Daniel, shut up, Daniel, shut up." And he's walking across the room, and I'm, "Shut up, dude, shut up." And he like parts the Red Sea, jumps through these chairs, grabs your, was it your trumpet or your case? Your trumpet case, and just launches it across the classroom. We're probably going to get him like sued for telling this story.
We won't say.
I won't say his name, but you know who you are.
I forgive you.
He launched Daniel's trumpet case across the classroom and took him out in the hallway and proceeded to yell at him where we could all still hear it. That's how loud it was inside. And I was just sitting there shaking my head. I'm like, gosh, this kid is dumb. But that was funny.
Yep. It's pretty much me in a nutshell. Yeah, that one always sticks out in my mind.
That was a good
fun
one.
Fun stories. Well, I've got some...
oh, boy. Here we go.
Got some. We like to do hot takes on this show at the end. So kind of like, you know, is a hot dog a sandwich? Just fun little stuff like that.
Yeah, something that's going to get me angry.
Yeah, exactly. I've personalized these to you. So, what's the best fast food chicken?
You already know what I'm going to say.
I know.
Bojangles, baby.
Bojangles.
Come on.
Yep. What do you love about Bojangles?
It's just seasoned wonderfully. It's always cooked good. You never get like a gristly piece. Sometimes they give you one that's a little burnt, though. That'll get me angry, but for the most part it's good chicken to bread combo. I only get the sandwiches, so I can't speak to like their actual fried chicken, but the sandwiches, like, most time you get a sandwich and it's like way too much bread or the bread's all soggy. It's like you get a nice bun with a good thick piece of chicken, seasoned good, and the sides,
the fries,
you can't,
incredible fries.
Yeah, the fries are great, but you get fries everywhere. You know what you get at Bojangles? Mac and cheese in a cup. What's better than that? And then they got, like, what, spicy rice or something like that? Some other stuff. Like, I don't know. I always get a tub of mac and cheese, but...
You do get a tub of mac. I forgot about that.
Hey, you got to bow-size it, baby. You got to bow-size it.
True or false, you went to Bojangles on your... What was it? Was it your week lunch? Or what? Your first week lunch?
Oh, yeah.
You can go to any restaurant in Bloomington.
Yeah.
And you're like,
Bojangles.
I'm going to Bojangles.
Well, one, it's like 5 minutes down the road. I was like, I don't want to be driving all the way across town. But also, so Bojangles was everywhere in North Carolina. I could be wrong, but I think it's a North Carolina, like, originated in North Carolina.
We'll fact check.
So I, yeah, don't. but, so I loved it down there, and I was so sad when I was getting out of the Marine Corps. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't have Bojangles again. Like, I'm going to have to go across the country to get Bojangles again. And then, like, a couple months before I get out, they're like, oh, they're building one in Bloomington. And I'm like, how wonderful. Yeah. So now I don't have to go without Bojangles.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, hit me with your next one.
Next one?
Yeah.
All right, I've got three more.
Okay.
Okay. Next one. Hunting is a waste of time and money.
True and false at the same time. Depending on how good you are, could be a waste of time. No matter how good you are, definitely is a waste of money.
That's fair.
But, I don't know. Whenever my wife kind of gets on me about buying hunting stuff, I'm like, would you rather me at the bar wasting all my money on beer? No, I'm doing it. Something I love that's fun and good for my health. And
good for your mental health.
Free food. I don't got to go spend money on meat at the grocery store.
That's right.
Organic, homegrown. So, true and false at the same time.
True and false. Okay. Classic country music is terrible.
That's just blatantly false. You did that on purpose. That's false. I would turn it around on you and say modern country music is completely
terrible. These are not my opinions.
Oh.
This is just things I know.
You're asking the question, so. No, that's false. If you can't compare Conway Twitty and George Jones and Hank Williams Jr., you can't compare them to anybody today and say that they're even in the same ballpark.
Not a Florida Georgia Line guy.
No. Don't get me started, Nate.
That's
He's
what
getting
I should
me all
have.
Angry. I come here to spread a good positive message, and this guy is just rage baiting me.
Oh, just wait for the next one. The next one's going to get you.
Oh, I'm so excited.
All right. My last one here. I already know it's going to fire you up. Aldi is the best grocery store.
No, Aldi's horrible. That's terrible. You want my true opinion on Aldi? You know what? You got it. You open this can of worms.
I don't
want
to get sued by Aldi here.
The grocery store that may or may not be known as Aldi.
Allegedly.
Does that cover you? I'm not a lawyer.
You got to use allegedly.
Okay, allegedly known as Aldi.
No. Go ahead.
What a stupid idea that I have to go to the grocery store, rent the shopping cart with a quarter, and try and fight. Those stupid things never work. You got to, like, fist fight with this shopping cart just to get it out. You ain't even gotten the store yet. You go in. Everything is like a knockoff that tastes like cardboard. Then, so you go through, get all your knockoff brands of stuff that aren't good and, like, terrible portion sizes, everything. You get to the end. You check out. You pay. And guess what? Now you got to go bag your own groceries. What is the point? Like, can we not hire somebody to do that? Every other grocery store has figured out to hire somebody to do that. Yeah, so why am I not getting paid to bag these groceries? Somebody, like, I didn't come here to do manual labor. I came here to get groceries. It's just ridiculous. Now, if there was no other grocery store in existence, sure, that's fine. But there are 100 other business examples to show you what works better. Because let me tell you, you ever been to Aldi? They're about this big. There's a reason Walmart is like 10 acres. Because they're doing it right. They're growing, and Aldi is staying tiny.
The most passionate.
I hate that store. I hate that store, man. I hate it.
Oh.
I don't hate it. I strongly dislike Aldi.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Sorry to – I know that's a hot take because a lot of people love Aldi. Yeah. You'll never change my mind, and I'm sorry to those of you that I've offended, but you're just wrong.
Oh, that was better than I expected. That was incredible.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the general public about your testimony, about any another lesson you've learned, or shout-outs to your family?
Trust in the Lord. If you don't know the Lord, genuinely, from the bottom of your heart, reach out, and He will respond. He loves you. He's not trying to make your life hard. Make it worse. He wants to help you. But first, you got to reach out. You know, phone call goes two ways. If he's the only one ever picking up the phone and calling, pretty soon he's going to stop calling. But the minute you call, he'll answer, you know? So, yeah, trust in the Lord and build a relationship with him and don't ever stop building it. Something I learned through the past 2 years as well is you don't just build it and then you're done building it. Like, you got to constantly keep adding on and building to it.
Mm-hmm. Logan, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate you telling your story and just sharing and having some laughs and making fun of each other. It's really something I enjoy about my life is our friendship. So I'm glad we could share it in front of a bunch of people and some cameras.
I appreciate it. It was a cool experience to get to come and do this. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you to Dayton back there on the ones and twos. Yeah. He might be getting used to being back there in the darkness. I don't know.
I kind of like this. I think I'll keep doing it.
Oh, boy.
I think we could switch for a bit.
All right. Thank you to the listeners. Until next time, own it every moment and stay purpose-driven.
Hi, everyone. This is CJ from Recruiting at Nussbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit NussbaumJobs.com. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into the conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.